why you have to believe that the socialists have had an aim to bring this kind of mess into America and to destroy our country. Now, let me say this, because I received an email from a couple of crackpots. And just let me say this, since I put that little clip up of the Russian guy, a couple of crackpots. That's what you are. You're out of your mind. Number one, I'm not going to answer your email because I think you're completely out of your mind. You need Christ. And you need to repent of your sins. Don't tell me I'm 65 that I don't know what the Hades I'm looking at. Yes, I'm upset at you. Don't tell me I don't know what I do know what I'm talking about. This country is becoming socialist communistic. And if your eyes are closed, you are a communist and you one of the fools trying to trick the ignorant and uneducated. Now put that in your pipe and smoke it or do whatever you want to do with it. But please, crackpots, don't send me no crackpot email. I just block you from my email and I will not answer you. And one of or two of you idiots tried to biscay the friend of mine and biscay his name and put out some stuff on him, sending out phony emails. I want to tell you now, those of you that listen to me, if you get a so-called email from me talking trash like I've never talked before, you know somebody done broke into my email account, and these scoundrels, they're all going to hell when they die anyhow. Oh, and let me say something else. No, let me leave that one alone. I'll handle that at a different time. Not surprisingly, the standards and the codes of marriage began to break down. In the 1920s, chastity, faithfulness grew outdated, and adultery became in vogue. Over time, the new sexual immorality broke up homes all around the country. In the year 1910, almost 9 marriages out of 100 ended in divorce. By 1920, the percentage had risen to more than 13. And by 1928, it ballooned to 1 in 6 marriages. Now, you can only imagine what it is today because people are not getting married for love. They get married to, I don't even want to disgrace this time talking about that. Most of these young people don't even know why they get married, have never experienced love, never seen it, and will not allow the love of Christ to impregnate their minds. And so that before they get impregnated by a heathen's child, the marriage may have a chance to make it. Such drastic changes are hard to fathom, even by today's standards. Yet, all this happened just a few short years. Now, Wilkerson goes on, as I move on down, he says, by 1928, America was a wild, roaring, prospering, or prosperous nation. It says, just like today, America in the roaring 20s enjoyed a 7-year bull market from 1923 to 1929. You remember, dun, 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 dun. What was the name of the dance? It's called the Charleston. That was a dance. See, we got modern dances. We look at Jay-Z and listen to all these other rappers and clappers and plappers and flappers. And, you know, we think we've done something. It is just a made over debauchery from years ago. That's all it is. Oh, John, there's something wrong with you. Wait a minute. Wilkerson goes on and says that the country's prosperity seemed endless. Stocks and railroad companies skyrocketed, even as the automobile industry produced tens of millions of cars in America. Radio was booming, and the value of companies such as General Electric, Woolworth, and Montgomery Ward escalated out of sight. When Herbert Hoover was elected president in 1928, the country was still riding high on the prosperity that had begun under Calvin Coolidge. President Hoover declared in his acceptance speech, and I quote, "We in America today are near to the final triumph over poverty than ever before in the history of the land. The poor houses are vanishing. We are in sight of the day when poverty will be banished from this nation. Now, doesn't that sound like your president today, Barack Obama? Listen, money and sports became the two golden idols of the time. Tell me that's not true. Man, the baseball season can't end before the football season starts. Then you got soccer tournaments. You got tennis tournaments. You got wild wrestling. Smashing the head. You just keeping the public. Man, it's all about sports. Sports car racing. You know, one guy did it. His sons do it. Another person do it. Now you got women entering into sports that they never entered into with men. I wouldn't be surprised within 2 or 3 years, you're going to have women on NFL teams. They're already trying to play basketball. And then when you count the lesbians that are on a female basketball team, you can probably figure that out too. So money in sports became the heroes. Millions of people invested in the stock market trying to strike it rich. Does that sound familiar? And the market kept smashing all previous records. Does that sound familiar? Everyone, it seemed, was playing the market. Shoeshine men, bus drivers, housewives, maids, butlers, even ministers were playing the market. Wilkerson goes on and says that one newspaper reported that 4 out of every 5 people who rode trolley cars were reading stock reports, and virtually every small city in the country had a brokerage house. America's prosperity was so rampant, all the rules of logic were broken. And that's what happened to us. It's just a repeating of history. People reasoned it this way. They said, every crash in the past has been followed by a recovery. The market can only go up. Therefore, there's no reason to sell. I'll just buy and hold on, quote unquote. Wilkerson says that in 1929, however, the Standard Trade and Security Services began to sense that the market was headed for trouble. At one point, they issued a stern warning. A handful of business leaders also awakened to the crises, and they tried to sound an alarm about a possibility of a crash. Several ministers joined in, denouncing America's widespread greed and prophesying that God was about to judge the country for its sins. See, and they have a few guys like me in every culture, in every society. And I'm not trying to sound like Rush Limbaugh. I'm not trying to be the conservative of the world. I am a preacher heralding the news that God will not be made a buffoon. But the vast majority of the experts responded and said, be bullish on America. Prosperity is here to stay. Just keep investing and spending. One writer of the time summed up America's vision of the future with these words, and he said, and I quote, we're a country free from poverty and hardship. We have new science, new prosperity, roads crowded with millions of new automobiles, airplanes are filling the skies, lines of high-tension wires flow hilltop to hilltop, with power to give information to 1,000 labor-saving machines. Skyscrapers rise above which cities which were one-time villages. Vast cities are rising up with great masses of stone and concrete and are roaring with incredibly mechanized traffic, and smartly dressed men and women are spending and spending and spending the money that they have won in the market. Americans ignored the few voices of reason who advised caution and just kept spending. And then the inevitable happened. On September the 3rd, 1929, no, Pastor John wasn't born, but my daddy and mama was. See, they were around. And that's where I learned the values of how to stretch out a pot of beans. But on September the 3rd, 1929, the market began to crack. Not the big crash, it just began to crack, just like ours did. And ours is going to continue to do. Something was wrong, and everybody in America knew it. Margin buyers suddenly began fleeing the market. Yet, even after the omen, Economic soothsayers raised a loud voice to try to calm the panic. The Harvard Economic Society announced, and I quote, "This is just a period of readjustment, a much-needed market correction. This is not the beginning of a depression." He was out of his mind. An expert named Professor Fisher declared, "Within a few months, the market will rebound and even go higher." President Hoover echoed the feelings of most financial observers. "America's industrial situation is absolutely sound. Our factories are humming. Business is healthy. The economy is in good condition. There is nothing fundamentally wrong with our underlying businesses of credit structure. It is a good time to buy stock." Wasn't he surprised? One newspaper published this headline on October the 16th, 1929. The headline read as follows: "American business is too big and diversified, and the country is too rich to be influenced by stock fluctuations." Now, doesn't this kind of reassurance sound familiar? Sure, it does. Sounds just like the guy you got in office right now and his entire cabinet right now. But you see, they're rich, and they're bringing in something else that you don't even know that exists. Finally, on Tuesday, and if you know anything about history, they call it Black Tuesday. And it was. I don't know when it's going to hit us this time. But on Tuesday, October 29th, 1929, the American stock market didn't crack. It crashed to the ground. Utter fear and panic struck by noon on that Tuesday. The leading stocks just kept falling. It wasn't a swoop like we experienced a few months ago. Well, it's going up, now it's going down. Nope, it kept falling. By this time, there were no bargain hunters. Investment buyers are big operators looking to buy back their own stock. No, instead, all across the country, people swarmed into their local brokers' offices, desperate to sell at any price. But there were just simply no buyers to buy it. The exchange system couldn't cope with the masses that were trying to sell. And within 8 short hours, the party was over, my friends. President Hoover tried to reassure the nation, like this Obama nation that we got in office over there. But his words had little effect. The communication system of America were jammed by the voices of sellers only, with no buyers in sight. Panic hit the foreign nations all across the world. People were stunned, shocked, and fearful at the news that the great economy of America had suddenly fallen. Well, now they're not shocked or stunned. They're buying us up. The Chinese, the Mexicans, and we're going to have the Amero going with, you know, Mexico and Canada, and China's already getting their bid on that. So, you know, hey, the shakers and the movers have already given it away. We're just experiencing this lull between the final big earthquake. In every town and village in the United States, families were cast into poverty, having lost their paper wealth. Soon, suicides were being reported in areas all over the nation. Now, that really blows my mind. I don't know why anybody would kill themselves because they don't have no money. Me growing up black in the inner city, there's a whole bunch of days I didn't have no money, and I never even thought about killing myself. I just thought I'd, you know, get out there and get a job and make something work, or plant some potatoes, buds, or something. But the Great Depression had begun. Consider what one writer said on the crash's aftermath. And I quote, "There was hardly a man or a woman in the country whose attitude towards life had not been affected by it by some degree. Hope was suddenly shattered. With the market in shambles and prosperity folding, Americans were soon to find themselves living in a different world. Everything changed. Day by day, the newspapers printed the grim reports of suicide." Ah, you see, my friends, the Deep Depression lasted nearly a decade. Ah, yeah. This is beautiful reading Dave Wilkerson's book. Then he asked the question, what brought down the stock market in 1929? Well, what was it exactly that shook America and the world during that time, during the prosperity, to move them from prosperity to poverty overnight? What brought on the worldwide depression? Simply put, it was the Lord, Dave Wilkinson said. It was the same God who destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah for their sins, the same God who judged Israel for its idolatry, bringing Titus's army into Jerusalem to destroy it, the same God that promises in the book of Revelation to wipe out the prosperity of Babylon in a single hour, the same God who have been warning America about its sin for years through the voices of the prophets who cry out with grieving, broken hearts. I'm one of those dudes. Yes, America is modern Babylon. Now, if you're a sinner, you say, oh man, this dude is preaching to me. This jive time, gray-headed old wobble, wobble, wobble. No, stop it. You need to listen to me. Yes, America is a modern Babylon. And God's message to Babylon is this. Thou said it, I shall be a lady forever, but thou didst not lay these things to thy heart, neither didst remember the latter end of it. Therefore, hear now this, thou that art given to pleasure, that dwellest carelessly, and saith in thine heart, I am and none else besides me, I shall not sit as a widow, neither shall I know the loss of children. Continue to listen to this. This is beautiful. I'm quoting from Isaiah 47, 7 through 11. He says, but these two things shall come to thee in a moment, in one day. This is God talking. Now, this is what comes. Loss of children, jumping out windows, killing themselves. Widowhood, your husband's gone off and leave you. They shall come upon you in the perfection of the multitude of their sorceries. In other words, your bullwinkle preachers that's lying to you, Creflo and TD and TBN pimps and all of them with their sorceries. And then it says, and for the great abundance of thine enchantments, because most Christians in America today has been bullwinkle by foolishness. Then it says, for thou hast trusted in thy wickedness. Thou hast said, none seeth me. See, that's where the sinner is. Don't nobody see what I'm doing. But then God says, thy wisdom and thy knowledge, it hath perverted thee. That's what's happened to America. All this technology we have and everything. That's why I tell these kids with their blueberries and their blackberries and their Texan, and we can do this, and I can get this car and do that. Brother and sister, it's one thing to have a fancy car like that, but no gas to put in it and nowhere to go and no food to eat. Please, you better listen to the word of the Lord. Look at this. He says, and for the great abundance of thine enchantments, he said, for thou hast trusted in your wickedness and have said, none seeth me.